Today, on the Earn More Tutoring podcast, Jody Klugman-Robb and I talk about her incredible story of accidentally discovering she had a different biological father than she was raised to believe after taking a commercial DNA test, how she used her mental health background to turn this discovery and story into the parental identity discovery curriculum, and how she balances all that with her private practice, podcast, and being a featured author for Psychology Today.
I must have had some sort of sixth sense that something was coming down the road, because it took about 14, 15 years before I discovered my own DNA surprise. And that's what led to me pioneering this curriculum. There was a vacuum in the market for something like this. So I became the first one in the nation, and I think quite possibly the world, to create a curriculum for mental health clinicians to help people like me discovering this, because it triggers an enormous identity crisis, grief and loss and trauma that for some reason traditional psychotherapy wasn't handling very well. There wasn't the right empathy and understanding coming from other clinicians.
So welcome to the Earn More Tutoring podcast. My guest today is Jody Klugman-Robb. Jody, welcome to the show.
Hi, Sean. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course. So first off, Jody, I'd just love for you to share what your different offerings are and the kind of work that you're doing with the audience.
So I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist, as well as a licensed professional counselor. I'm also a doctoral student earning my PsyD on the side. So that'll happen hopefully sometime next year. And I'm an adjunct faculty on Dominican University of California. So I have a lot of different hands in the psychology pie, so to speak. I also produce and co-host a podcast called Sex Lies and the Truth. So I do a lot of different things around psychology. So the Sex Lies and the Truth podcast is really focused specifically on DNA surprises and people who've learned that they didn't have the father or mother that they were raised to believe they have. And then I have a private practice that I utilize my LMFT and LPC licensees for, and I work with adult attention deficit disorder. I work quite profoundly with trauma and EMDR. If you're familiar, maybe your listeners are familiar with EMDR, eye movement desensitization and reprocessing. So I do a lot of work with first responders and trauma. And then the specialty that I'm pioneering called parental identity discovery. So that's the curriculum that I wrote to work specifically with the DNA surprises.
Yeah, that's great. It's, you know, one thing that many guests on this show talk about is having multiple revenue streams. And I know it's not all about the revenue. It's about, you know, following your different passions, but oftentimes the revenue follows that, right? If you're focused on the things that you are passionate about and you can create an offering around it. So tell us, what was the first one, you know, that I imagine the private practice was the first, you know, the foundation of your building your career. How did you get into that? How did you, you know, and if that's not correct, let me know. But I imagine, you know, that was before the podcast and the parental identity discovery. So tell us about how you got into that.
You're right. It started with the private practice. I always knew when I was going through graduate school that I would end up in a private practice. I wanted control over my schedule. I'm entrepreneurial just enough that I knew I wanted some freedom in order to develop what I wanted to develop. I just didn't know what that was at the time, but I must have had some sort of sixth sense that something was coming down the road, because it took about 14, 15 years before I discovered my own DNA surprise. And that's what led to me pioneering this curriculum. There was a vacuum in the market for something like this. So I became the first one in the nation, and I think quite possibly the world, to create a curriculum for mental health clinicians to help people like me discovering this, because it triggers an enormous identity crisis, grief and loss and trauma that for some reason traditional psychotherapy wasn't handling very well. There wasn't the right empathy and understanding coming from other clinicians. And I kept getting feedback from this from clients who would come to see me as I started to market this and really take off that entrepreneurial spirit around this particular subspecialty of mine. Then the podcast took off after that, and I co-host it with the investigative genealogist that I hired to find my biological family. And so we do this together now and looking at a revenue stream through that podcast, you know.
Yeah, to be honest, now that you're sharing the issue, it makes sense that there would be a need to, you know, have a supportive situation in that dynamic of not knowing who your biological parents are and wanting to figure it out. Can you share a little bit more about your personal story related to that? Because I'm just fascinated and I would love to understand it further and also help the audience empathize with that particular situation, which they may not be familiar with.
I would be happy to. I think more and more people are getting familiar with it now. It's kind of one of those cocktail conversation topics that when it comes up, somebody says, oh yeah, so-and-so friend of mine or my cousin discovered that or had somebody contact them out of the blue saying that they were family. So with the advent of the commercial direct-to-consumer DNA tests, like 23andMe or Ancestry, to name but a few, people have been discovering some family secrets that didn't have the chance to be exposed until the science came out as proof. I decided to take a 23andMe test in 2014 for fun as a way to get to know my dad's side of the family. It was a side of the family that I wasn't especially close to, but I had always yearned to be and felt a little bit on the outside all the time and didn't really understand why. And there's a lot of background that I don't think I will go into around that part of the family and kind of the upbringing that led to that. But once I learned the results, I had 50% different ancestry than I expected. I went into it thinking I was going to be some mixture of Russian and German, which was where the family was supposed to have emigrated from Russia. But Klugman is a German name. So I thought it was going to be some combination of the two. And then I already knew my mom's side of the family was Italian. So that part more or less was reflected in the results. But all of a sudden I was 50% Scottish and that was never part of the folklore of the family. But I'm the only redhead in the family. And I would constantly get the question, oh, you must be Irish. And oh, are you Scottish? And I would say, no, there are redheads in other places of the world. But it didn't occur to me in a visceral way until about 2014, wait, I am the only redhead in the family. Nobody else looks like me. And I do look a lot like my mom in the face. That I was always the reason, so to speak, that I didn't look like my dad or his side of the family. And then puzzle pieces just started to fit together. Well, if I'm Scottish, then that answers the red hair. And that must mean I'm not related to my dad, which answers why I don't look like him or feel like I belong to that side of the family. And then I started learning about things like genealogical bewilderment and another term, inalienable bond of biology. And these were all applicable in the adoption literature over the last century. So now we have a new way of applying these terms, adoption understanding, but really from a different etiology. It was my mom had a series of affairs in the 70s, and you're from Northern California. You know what the Bay Area was like in the 70s. There was a lot of free love, a lot of hot tubs. It was, you know, the summer of love never really died out. And so she was really unhappily married and had a series of affairs and didn't know who my dad was and picked who she thought was my dad. Turned out to be the wrong guy biologically, but the right guy in terms of he was the best dad. I had a great childhood and a great upbringing. And I really loved him quite a bit. He passed away in 1996. But he wasn't my biological dad. And there was always some sort of outsider status with his family that finally discovering this story helped me to understand. Then I got the nerve up to search for who my dad might be. And I hired this investigative genealogist, Christina Bryan Fitzgibbons. She helped me find him inside of 2 weeks. It was super fast. I thought it would take years. And I found myself knocking on his door a few months later, saying, "I think you're my dad." And we had a conversation for about 3 hours where he verified, "Yep, I knew I was your dad, but I just didn't think I was going to be a good dad. And I could see she didn't really want me around. So I left." And I learned I had a half brother I didn't know about, a nephew, sister-in-law, aunts, uncles, a whole new family to discover and explore. And it's been a very positive experience for me in that new biological family because they've been extremely receptive and I've forged some really close bonds with some family members, including my brother in particular. And I was raised an only child, so having a sibling is kind of an odd phenomenon for me. I have a good relationship with my bio dad, and unfortunately it created a probably irreparable rift with the dad who raised me's family. But that seems to be a pretty common part of the story. Most people end up experiencing rejection on one or both sides. So that's what I've set out to help people cope with. How to deal with the internal discovery, rebuilding who you are, because that sense of identity is really questioned when you realize you're no longer related to the person who raised you. You may have tried really hard to identify and align with the ethnicities and the culture and everything that goes along with that family, only to find out that you're really not part of it biologically. And for some reason, that has a significant impact, that knowledge of biological connection.
Wow. I'm just floored right now. It's like, you think, you know, for me, hearing your story and not really expecting to know that or to even think about that issue. And then to be, I guess, awoken to that reality and that story and that journey. It's like, it's incredible. You know, it's incredible that you think reality looks one way and you're just like, this is my life and these are my parents. And, you know, I'm just, and, you know, my problems are, you know, or not even problems, but just, it's kind of like reality often seems so, I guess, static or, you know, immovable. You know, this is how I identify myself. And then for me, hearing your story, I felt like whatever is inside of me and my identity, like shifting, like, what if that was this for me? And what if, and, you know, it's like those little things you hear, you know, my mom has said before, like, well, you know, oh, you're, you know, we're not sure about your dad's background because of this aspect or, you know, this hair color or, you know, or my mom, I'm not sure about this aspect, but just to have that, you know, everything kind of broken apart in a way and reshaped is, I just can only imagine. And, you know, just for you to be present here is, and be able to tell your story and to have gone through that, that's really powerful. And I'm sure it's not been an easy process. Like I see you here talking about it right now and sharing the story, but I'm sure that's been extremely difficult, but also powerful and revealing. And so, yeah, it seems like, of course, there's a need for other people who are going through that. And what do other people do who are going through your story? Like, it sounds like you are kind of the person or you're, you know, the course that you've created. Tell us more about that. You know, how do you help people who are going through a similar dilemma?
Yeah, I'm happy to. What you're responding to is realizing that there's an identity crisis there. And we go through our first identity crisis in adolescence. That's a planned developmental time for identity exploration. We feel awkward. We feel out of place. We try on all sorts of aspects of ourselves. The different dimensions of identity start to really take hold. And then in American culture, there's the belief that we have a midlife crisis. There's some research to prove that that really may be an American phenomenon of privilege and not really something that humanity goes through in its entirety. However, this discovery really brings on one of those identity crises, and that's what feels so destabilizing. So, big part of the curriculum, the parental identity discovery program that I've created, works on helping people rebuild their identity. It's a slow process, and I take into account what happens in adolescence in a natural way, trying on different things. so to speak. So in particular, if you discover, like I did, that you have a whole different cultural background genetically, the idea is to explore that. And for a lot of people in my position, there's I'll call it an intuition or a sixth sense that they didn't really belong to the family that they were raised in. And they had an intuitive interest in a whole separate culture. For instance, I've had clients who were raised British, but swore they were more affiliated with the Italian culture. Like they just felt a connection there. And then they would learn from this discovery that they indeed had Italian family. So that's the inalienable bond of biology, of having this inexplicable pull to something that contextually you have no context to make sense of. But now with this discovery, yeah, okay, now it makes sense. It's like this cellular memory calling out to me. So we explore the cultural aspects of what they've discovered. I coach them, because I'm a therapist, on family systems and how to communicate with both sides of the family. So we start out by doing what's called an if-then action plan. So in a lot of circles, it's called a flowchart. And we start by exploring what's the goal, and then what are all the possible outcomes that could come from that goal? You know, if A happens, then B, and then C, and it keeps going on and on. We keep exploring what all the different reactions could possibly be to all the different outcomes. And so that helps prepare people for what would probably unsettle them and create a lot of emotionality and defensiveness. And now this way, they've thoughtfully planned conversations, outright physical responses where maybe there could be a cutoff in the family. How would they respond to that? What would that look like in a year's time of all the different possibilities? If it were cutoff or reunion or just plain old tension that just didn't really resolve itself, what's that going to look and feel like over the first Christmas, your first birthday post-discovery, all the major life cycle events? Maybe there's a wedding in the family, whatever the other life cycle events may be. How will that feel during any of these possible options? And so then that helps them plan for conversations with family. So for instance, when I was going through my discovery, the invaluable conversations that I had with Christina, the investigative genealogist, helped me prepare for all those outcomes. So what happens if he rejects me? And he tried to. He pretended he wasn't himself when he first answered the door. But because I had all of Christina's intel, I didn't buy it. I did go away for a few minutes because he closed the door. And I said, you know, somebody who's trying to send somebody away doesn't look at them the way that he looked at me. And I attribute that to my psychological training and understanding body language a little bit more. So I went back and knocked back on the door and was just going through my mind, all right, so here's where I step it up a little bit. And it worked the second time. He actually later has come to say that he admired my persistence and it reminded him of his mom. So he decided to let me in and let go of the secret that he had been holding for, at that point, 43 years. So then we also go through all the different options of what happens in the family system that's known when they get defensive and when they threaten to cut you off in order to keep the status quo so that the family secret doesn't come out. A lot of times the family is concerned about how will this reflect on us? What will our image look like now that, you know, so-and-so's actions, usually a woman's actions around her sexuality has been outed in the community? They still live like it's the 50s or the 60s or the 70s, expecting there to be a backlash. And I just don't think that's the case as much now, right? The ideas around sexuality, in particular women's, are much more lenient, shall we say, much more equal. So, you know, contemporary feelings around this have really changed, but they still live as though it's the time frame that it originally happened. And so there's a lot of exploration there and a lot of coaching on my end to help people in my position were called MPEs, misattributed parentage, to understand their perspective, that this isn't such an easy thing to let go of, and that it takes them some time to come around, just in the same way that it takes a lot of time for us to come around and get to know ourselves again and feel like we're on stable ground.
Yeah, I mean, that is an amazing story. And I'm just enraptured. And I'm thinking, when is this movie coming out? Like, this is an incredible story. Like, I want to watch it all unfold, like on Netflix or something. I don't know. Sorry if that comes off wrong. It's just a great story. And it's so important to help people really resolve, or I guess I don't know what the word would be, but to like understand your identity and to be comfortable with it. And I just think about my own story, you know, in the sense that like I don't have the same political views as my parents, and that's totally different, right? That has nothing to do with misattributed, you know, biological lineage, but there are things that are not necessarily in tune or aligned with both sides of my families. And I, hearing your story, I want to go through a journey to resolve those and not just ignore it and just be like, okay, well, that's not, you know, that's not something I know how to deal with. So I'm just going to, it's a black hole in my life. I would love to be on a journey and to receive coaching to resolve the things that I ignore. And I'm sure there's, you know, I could probably, out of 10 people, there's probably 9 of them who are in the same space. Like, I'm just going through my day to day and I can't address certain things, you know. And I think about so many people who say like, oh, I can't even go home for the holidays because I don't know how to interact or talk. So it sounds like what you're providing is a pathway to engage in these really, 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 I'm going to say really like 5,000 times challenging scenarios. And that is so powerful. So thank you for what you're providing. And in the spirit of the show, which is kind of to help people understand, you know, not only, you know, the offering, but also how you created this, I'd love to hear more about what were the challenges around, you know, going from just not just, but seeing people one-on-one, being a therapist, being a coach, to creating a course and trying to teach this to people on a larger scale and provide this to people. How did you go about that? I'm sure it wasn't just like, oh, I'll just write it out in a spreadsheet or, you know, a document. Like, tell us about that journey and what the challenges were associated with that.
Absolutely. So this is where the entrepreneurial spirit really started to take hold. And I have to give my husband some credit. He's very entrepreneurially minded, very business minded. And he looked at me when probably within a month of my discovery, and he's like, you know, you got to do something with this professionally, right? And I kind of looked at him doe-eyed and I was like, are you serious? How the hell do I translate this into something coherent professionally? So I spent about a year and a half mulling it over. And then it clicked one day. I have all of the tools that I need. I have been trained in every single modality and orientation and intervention that I need in order to make something like this work. That couldn't have been coincidental. Carl Jung refers to a process called synchronicity. And it's something that I have come to take a lot of stock in. Clearly my path in psychology was somewhat predestined. And my focus on anger management early in my career, my early training and interest in family systems development really set the stage. And then probably the most important, I trained in EMDR from the founder, Francine Shapiro, early on, just after I got my license, just kind of inexplicably drawn to this intervention. It is the most effective and efficient form of trauma intervention out there, in my opinion. And it works beautifully with the trauma that comes from this sort of discovery. It also works beautifully in working with adult ADHD clients because they come into therapy with a certain amount of trauma from early childhood, feeling extremely misunderstood and pigeonholed by not only family, but teachers and now maybe bosses that don't really understand the complexities and subtleties of ADHD. So, you know, that issue by itself, it's not just a matter of not having enough attention or too much and not knowing what to do with it, but the subsequent feelings of I'm not good enough, because I'm always doing something wrong. The EMDR deals with that beautifully. And there are some certain shared characteristics in the MPE discovery as well. I don't know who I am. I'm not good enough. I'm not wanted, especially if the biological family decides that they don't want any contact. That really sets the stage for a lot of traumatic core beliefs. So the EMDR works great with that. So I developed my curriculum sort of like I was just starting to write a paper. And in fact, it just kind of came out as a white paper to begin with. Got it all down. Then I translated that into PowerPoint slides and started making segments. So I came up with the 7 characteristics of NPE, and they're somewhat fluid characteristics, but you can also go through them linearly, and they're meant to mirror the process of grief and loss. But it goes through all the various characteristics of where somebody in my discovery would say, I'm stuck here, or I'm stuck in the 6th characteristic, or I'm kind of moving back and forth, and is that normal? So I can help normalize, here it all is, down in an infographic. I have all the information that substantiates it from Eric Erickson's work with identity, cognitive behavioral therapies that talk about communication with family and all the different family orientations, Salvador Minuchin or Whitaker, to name a few of the early fathers of family psychotherapy that I used to write my curriculum. And then I go through what a clinician can do to support them and interventions to help move the process along. It is a process. So people go at their own pace. They'll go forward, they'll go backward. But the idea is that you're gaining some momentum and skill along the way so that when a client metaphorically looks over their shoulder to see, have I made any headway, they'll actually see that. Oh yeah, I feel differently than I did a month ago or 2 years ago. I'm 4 years into my journey and I feel like I'm 180 degrees difference because I got psychotherapy around it. I did EMDR around it. And I used all the skills that I was trained in to address all the dysfunction in the family, ironed out some issues with my mom, and got to a place where I feel extremely comfortable with myself and being able to help everybody else go through it. I can recognize where they are. They see somebody as a professional who hasn't dismissed them, which unfortunately has happened a lot from a professional standpoint. Shouldn't happen at all. You should go to a therapist, and regardless of your issue, there should be empathy there and then clinical skill to apply to anything as long as it's in your scope of practice. So then the last piece that I work on is if you aren't trained in EMDR, it is an expensive training for clinicians to go through. I've written up a cognitive behavioral application that can help people kind of walk through it as though it were psychological first aid so that they can at least feel their feet on the ground. And then maybe they do go out elsewhere to EMDR, or you just start them through the other 7 characteristics and start from the beginning, so to speak.
Yeah, that's a journey. It sounds like not only to help the person through understanding their own identity, but also for you, you know, from, you know, I know you said it was about 4 years, you know, since you had began that journey, but just the process of the word that comes to mind is like birthing, like something that you've thought of, you know, it's like you conceptualized it, you went through it, your husband kind of nudged you to move forward with it. You wrote it all out, you put it into a PowerPoint, you like broke it into chunks, you know, and then you created like a manual or tools. Like that's a really, it's not just like a, you know, something you put on a spreadsheet or whatever. It's like a real process to creating this tool. Why did you choose a course, not a book? Or, you know, maybe there is a book associated, but why a course?
I think the course has to come before the book. So I teach 2 to 3 times a year via webinar for other clinicians across the country how to use this. So far, I've been able to get certification for California MFTs and LCSWs and LPCs, et cetera, so that they can get CEUs for it. And I'm working on that on a national level, because we do have to have 36 hours of continuing education units every 2 years. So if you're going to take a training, you want to get something in return for it, in addition to the skill that you're getting trained in. So that part I'm still working on. But it felt important to me to have something substantial in order to offer and bring to a publisher. So I have, my program is copywritten. My term parental identity discovery is trademarked. And that felt like the first initial official step for professional recognition. The book is something that I'm working on. That's a longer endeavor. And from what I've researched so far and other people who I've interviewed who've gone through publishing, publishing itself has changed so much. It's just a complicated animal to go through now. So I have a first draft of a book completed, and it's right now it's just my story, but I'm trying to figure out how to incorporate a professional aspect of it as well. My real interest is being honed down into two areas: the identity formation, just in general, how we form our identities and what goes into that, but also what happens in this discovery with DNA tests and misattributed parentage, how it changes that, and the need for genealogical bewilderment, how that comes up even as an issue. So that's part of my dissertation that I'm working on as a doctoral student, how identity formation and genetic genealogical bewilderment, rather, go hand in hand. I think once I have all of that together, I think I'll have something that a publisher might be interested in. I don't know why my story by itself would be interesting. It is interesting as an anecdotal story, but on a larger scale, I think it needs more. I think it needs some research behind it to show why identity is such an important part of our development. And it's been studied quite a bit, but not in this form.
Well, I want to just push back on that and say that it is super interesting and empowering to hear your courage to confront, to go back to the door when your dad, your biological father, closed it and to say, no, like, we're going to talk, but of course, like, having all the background and you creating and learning so much about identity through all your professional work and, getting your doctorate, like, that is also part of the story, right? Is that you didn't just settle, but you didn't just stop at, learning your story. You also wanted to understand like every nuance of how it's created. So that, it's a great story and it's a great kind of tool to teach others on how to discover themselves. So
thank you. I'm going to piggyback on something you said earlier, where you align what your income streams usually are successful when they're aligned with your natural interests. And I was happy plugging along in my private practice. I was able to volunteer in my kids' school a couple of days a week in the mornings, and then go to my clients in the afternoon and make my schedule whenever I want, take vacations whenever I want. Now that I am teaching as a professor, I can't do that. But it was a pretty static existence in private practice. And I didn't realize that I was getting bored. So once this discovery happened, and it kind of resuscitated my practice, where I said, oh, this is exciting. And I think I can develop this into something even more. I had no designs on doing a podcast. I'd always wanted to write a blog, but didn't feel like I knew what I wanted to say, at least around one topic. I didn't want to just write about random stuff. I tried it for a little while. It didn't feel right. I didn't like writing it. And then this happened, and I got in touch with Psychology Today, and I said, here is my idea for a blog. I would like you to give the green light, and they did. And now I have a blog through Psychology Today called Finding Family, where I write specifically about this discovery and all the different aspects of it. And I actually enjoy writing it. I find I don't have a lot of time for it right now because of school. But all these different ways to support my practice have finally fit together. And now it finally feels right.
That's wonderful because, yeah, thank you for refocusing the show because I just got so into your story and forgot about my podcast. But it's like when you dive in and you explore your own story and journey, the fruits of that are just expansive, right? So you've got, you know, your private practice that's there, but then you're teaching others, you're writing for Psychology Today, you're got your course going, you're looking to the future for a book. It's like you've really found, or I was trying to decide, is it found or created? Maybe you could talk about that. Is it finding what you're looking for, or is it like choosing something and creating it? Just, I'd love to know your thoughts on that.
Yeah, that's an interesting perspective. I'm going to answer that. Pardon me. I'm going to answer that question from a DNA perspective, I think. I didn't realize what I had been looking for all along, because why would you? You take for granted what you're brought up with because it's supposed to be that way. So when the discovery happened, I didn't realize that I had been looking for family the entire time. That's the name for my blog, Finding Family. And I didn't realize that even though I had set out to create a private practice, that there was something so much more in addition to that that I was looking for. So I would say that everything found me in the end, that I've ended up responding to it and creating some things as a result. But I think maybe it's more accurate to say I was receptive to everything else that was out there and it found me.
That definitely aligns with, I guess, one of my core beliefs and something that I forgot about until this moment, but the idea of being a receptor to the universe in a way, like hearing what people are saying around you. And I think so often, and for so many years, I was just like caught up in a train of like, okay, I just got to like go to the next step and this and this and just, and then it's like when you start hearing and responding and, you know, for me, I'm just thinking about, you know, my business as executive function coaching where I was a teacher and I was doing it a little bit on the side, but then the more I started like listening to my clients and they were like, could you help us with this and this and this? And then I was like, well, I can't do it alone. I got to, you know, hire someone to help me. And yeah, it's like responding to the world and having the courage to hear it and create things for it in artistically and scientifically. So I'd like to ask you, you know, now that you're at this place, this is like a very technical question, but what tools help you be successful and manage all these different endeavors? So, you know, just, you know, so one of my listeners asked like, you know, ask them what tools they use, or, you know, some people use QuickBooks or some people are really passionate about, you know, different software that helps them manage all their clients. So could you tell us about some of the tools that help you manage your different ventures and work?
Sure. It might actually sound a little mundane. In terms of managing my books, it's my husband. He's my accountant. So he's not a professional accountant, but he manages that side. In terms of software, I use Squarespace. So, you know, client management and all of that goes through that website. They schedule. And for a sole provider like myself, there's no overhead. There's no charge to use it because I don't have any employees. So all of my client scheduling, database management, all of that is through Square, and I can accept credit cards. So it takes all the telephone back and forth away and frees my schedule, and then I just direct everybody to my website. The scheduling buttons are there and very intuitive to use, and I'm not playing the telephone game back and forth trying to schedule people. My calendar is in real time. You can see it and choose the different kind of session that you want. Other than that, Zoom has become my best friend over the pandemic. I didn't expect to be able to use Zoom successfully for EMDR. In fact, prior to the pandemic, I was insisting, if you want to come see me for EMDR, it has to be in person. So you have to either come to my Marin office or my Napa office and nothing else. So that had to change pretty much overnight. And I was surprised to see how successfully that works.
Yeah, I've never looked into Square. I keep getting little ads from them and I'm like curious about it, but it's good to know that you can do so much through it. And then also it's free for solopreneurs or sole proprietors or whatever the word for it is. That's really good to know. So I know you want to go swimming. So, and I want to go for a run soon, but I wanted to ask you a couple more questions before we finish up. So one is, what is the biggest challenge that you're facing in your work right now?
Time has become a commodity for me that I never anticipated. Between teaching at Dominican, teaching these webinars, running a private practice, I do have two children who just got back into their sports after a year of no sports. So I'm back into logistically shuttling them from place to place. Time is my biggest commodity, and that's what I'm fighting against most. I think eventually it will end up being how to get published. My goal is to write a book. My other goal is to get a TED Talk going on identity. So those are a little bit farther out in the future. I think I need to get through my dissertation first, but maybe sometime next year.
Those are awesome goals. I see it happening. I can't wait to see your TED Talk and check out your book. That's really thrilling. And I think also what I like about it is I think this is reflective of who you are. I can just tell from this conversation, but you have really clear goals. It's not like, I want to be, you know, I kind of like say this one, but it's not like, don't say you want to be happy. Like, of course you want to be happy, but what do you need to do to be happy? So for, you know, and not saying happiness is the absolute goal for what you just shared, but yeah, I want to write a book. I want to do a TED Talk. Like, those are really clear, smart goals. And you also shared, and when I say smart, I'm talking about the acronym, not the, the adjective. Mm-hmm. So Jody, thank you so much for sharing your time. I have a few rapid fire questions I'd like to ask you if you're open for it.
Okay.
Does that sound good?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, so first one, Apple or Android?
Apple.
Book that helped you with growing your business the most?
For some reason, the book that's coming to me is Edward Halliwell's Driven to Distraction. It's about ADHD. It helped grow that specialty of mine and really put a structure around how I wanted to work with that population.
Favorite movie?
Oh, I don't know that I have just one. I have a handful. I love The Color Purple. I love Weird Science. My God, so many. Foul Play. If you've never seen Foul Play, it's a great San Francisco movie from the 70s with Chevy Chase and Goldie Hawn. I highly recommend it.
I will check that out. App you couldn't live without?
Oh my God, too many to count. Trello.
What's Trello?
So Trello is like an agile chart, but not quite as complicated as the spreadsheets usually are for project management. So it's a way to project manage different things. So I use it for everything.
Nice. That's cool. I've been wondering about how to project manage and prioritize and put subtasks in. So I'll have to check out Trello. Best album.
Oh God, this is too hard to pick just one. So I'm a diehard Led Zeppelin fan, but I also can't do without Eric Clapton or Guns N' Roses.
Ideal vacation spot?
Scotland.
I wonder why. No. it's part of your DNA.
So I was in Scotland with my family on a vacation when Christina called me to tell me, I know who your dad is. I'm not going to give you his name because I don't want you to Google him, but he's definitely Scottish and your last name is McLeod. And whoa. I was sitting in Inverness at the time.
McLeod, that like just resonates as a very Scottish sounding name. Mm-hmm. Best Amazon purchase in the last 6 months?
I'd have to say it just came yesterday, some bar stools for a hot tub bar that I'm putting in outside.
A hot tub bar. You are taking the hot tub culture to the next level, building on our forefathers, as we say.
Yep, exactly.
I love it. Self-care activity of choice. I feel like it's probably related to that last question, but yeah, self-care activity of choice.
Yeah, I don't have the hot tub yet. It's all getting remodeled in the background. So massage.
Right, I have an amazing masseuse for you since you're nearby.
Okay.
We book her once a month. She comes to the house. It's incredible. She's like We love her. Shout out to Shondell. You're amazing. And I'd love to hear your recommendation too. And I was going to ask, another guest told me that she built a sauna in her backyard. So I just wanted to throw that. There's like sauna kits. And they like set one up. So I don't know if the hot tub and the sauna would be overdoing it, but
The plans are already in place and demo starts next week. So
okay, yeah. Got it. Best TV show.
Marvelous Mrs. Maisel.
Can't wait. Is it season 3? We're like dying for season 3, or is it season 4? I can't remember.
I think it's season 3 that we're waiting for.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. We can't wait.
It's a year behind.
Spoiler alert out there. So the last thing was she got kicked off the tour, right? Yep. That was like heartbreaking. But she kind of earned that. Herself. Yeah. Okay. If a book was written about your life, what would the title be?
Well, ironically, my working title is My Three Dads.
That is definitely intriguing. Jody, it's been such a pleasure to have you here today. I feel like my identity has shifted and just new kind of curiosities and things that I want to learn about, you know, and wanting to learn more about your work and everything you're doing. If people want to find out more about what you're doing, I know that you've got the blog on Psychology Today, but maybe you could just run us through the different ways that people can access your work.
Happy to. So my main website is jkrab.com. You can find everything there, scheduling for psychotherapy, my links to upcoming webinars where I'm teaching clinicians how to use my curriculum. The next one is May 1st. It's an Eventbrite link on my website on the professional development page. I've got all the podcasts up there. So Sex, Lies, and the Truth lives on anywhere you listen to podcasts, Apple and everything else. Finding Family on the Psychology Today blog. And that's probably it, other than a, you know, Instagram account and Facebook account where you can find me and see what's coming up next.
I hope you got value from today's episode. Please leave a review and a comment and crush that subscribe button. New episodes will be posted each Sunday. You can join our email list by going to earnmoretutoring.com and entering your email. And lastly, please become a patron so we can remain ad-free and focus on helping educators earn more. This show is written by Sean McCormick. This show is produced by Casey Sticker and Sean McCormick. Music production is by Casey Sticker. Our marketing management team includes Maya Pugach and Sadie Smith. To learn more, you can go to earnmoretutoring.com.